And welcome back to Are You From That Show, the podcast brought to you by Jordan and Hattie. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is episode 4 of season 3. Welcome back. A huge thank you to all our listeners for your comments and your messages after last week's episode with Victoria. So many of you loved hearing that conversation, and so please do subscribe, if you don't already, wherever you get your podcast, so that our episodes hit your phones as soon as they land. And now, on to today's episode. Here we are with the amazing Bobby Lockwood. We had such a good time chatting to Bobby, so we hope you enjoy the episode. Bobby Lockwood started his acting career at a young age as the voice of Patch in Walt Disney's 101 Dalmatians 2. He was in the original cast of House of Anubis before landing a lead role in the CBBC series Wolfblood, for which he won a Children's BAFTA. He's gone on to star in numerous film and television projects, including Uncle for BBC Three, The Unforgotten on ITV, Eurovision, Honey 3, The Outpost, and Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk. He can now be seen playing the role of Leon North, the new paramedic, in the BBC's long-running show Casualty, and we're so pleased to have him with us on the podcast today. Welcome, Bobby.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That's a really long bio.
What's going on? I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, that was me. How was it hearing it all back read to you?
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, because there's little things I've almost forgotten about. And I mean, some things seem like so long ago. To think that even House of Anubis was 10 years ago, and that felt me being like, oh, now I feel like I'm an adult now, is so crazy. I mean, Dalmatians, Patch was, I got that when I was 6, I think. So wow. That was 21 years ago, which is pretty mad. So I've been doing this for over 20 years. Feels odd. Really odd.
Does it feel like 20 years, or does it feel like much shorter? Or longer?
I don't know. I guess it feels like I've been doing it my whole life. I guess is that I can't remember a time I wasn't doing it. There's times when obviously I haven't been working and I've had big gaps, not through, you know, choice.
But,
So it does. It just feels like I've been doing it forever.
So to start off then, how did you get that role? Well, the voiceover role in Patch.
So I was at a local dance school. That's how I really got into acting. I was just, I danced as a kid. My mum said that she felt like I would react to music. And my older brother played like hockey like my dad and is very sporty. My mum was like, I think I want to take Bobby dancing. My dad was like, fine.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I did that and I just loved it. And then in a dance show, a local agent come to see the show, saw me dance, and come up to my mum afterwards and said, I want to represent Bobby for acting. She was like, but he's never acted. She was like, it's fine, he doesn't need to. And then my first audition I ever got was to record a tape. It was actually, I auditioned for Lucky in Dalmatians, and so he only had like a couple lines, but I did that, but they liked me, and then I ended up, it's kind of an interesting story actually, but I think I was on the fortunate side of someone sort of either getting cast or thinking they'd had it, and then like last minute them getting chopped and me getting it.
Wow.
Yeah, which was obviously super lucky for me. But then years later, I'll be on the other side of that and I realise that it's not so nice. but yeah, so that was crazy. I was 6 and I just remember taping on a little cassette recorder.
Oh gosh, I remember.
And then gradually ended up going to London and doing a, you know, in a proper booth, and strange. It was really strange.
How was it like recording in a booth for being 6 years old? Was it just like really odd, or did you feel like quite calm, or?
It was just like play. I remember just loving it. And I remember my mum saying, I remember the little things I remember from that time is like it getting to lunchtime at school and me having to leave. So I remember going back, my mum would make me a chicken mayonnaise sandwich, a chicken mayonnaise cucumber sandwich. Yeah, it was my favourite. So we'd have that. And then me and my mum would go up to London. She was my chaperone. And I would record these, you know, these scenes or this thing. And them being like, right, we have to stop now or we have to take a break. And me being like, why? We can just carry on. I'm fine. And my mum remembers me always just wanting to carry on. And mum's like, no, legally, we have to stop. You can only work for a few hours. We need to have a break. Or, and I was like, we've got more pages to do. And mum's like, if we have to go home, they booked the studio for this. And I'm like, why? But there's no one here. It's like, late night. Because we were on the, it was directed by Americans. So we were on, we always started later because of the time difference.
Yeah.
We'd go to the evening and then I'd go home, go to school. And a bunch of people at school didn't even know I was gone. They didn't recognize. I only realized later that people didn't know I was missing, especially people in other classes. They just had no idea.
How long was you recording for?
It lasted for like a year, 2 years, but it would be like I had like a 4-5 week chunk and then I'd be off for a bit and then I'd come back in for like a few days. And then it was really sort of here and there, but it was, yeah, over a couple of years, I'm sure of it, from the beginning.
Was there ever a time during those years then that you didn't want to go or you were missing something that you wanted to do back with your friends?
I mean, no, I've never not wanted to go. I never not wanted to work. I think I remember I got told off at school because my parents are always so like school comes first. And, you know, the school have been really kind in letting you do this, letting you go. And I do remember a lot of my school life was me being like, oh, my God, if I got into trouble, I'd be like, they're not going to let me go and do this acting thing that I do. Oh, my gosh. And that was like a big worry.
Yeah.
Throughout my childhood. But in terms of like missing, I did miss things as a kid. I missed, you know, I guess party certain events and things like that, but it was always like, I'm sorry. And my friends get it, they understand. So it's never been that big of a deal. It's been worse as I've grown up and the choices I've made being an actor, you know, not having any money, not being able to afford to go do stuff, not being able to do things because of my lifestyle choices. That's when I'm like, why am I not doing something else?
Yeah.
But missing stuff because of work is like, I feel very lucky to be able to do what I do. So
I guess I was going to ask if you were an ambitious child, but I feel like maybe you just answered that.
I was particularly ambitious. I just loved it. And I just loved doing what I was doing. And I was just so happy to be doing it. And it was always a hobby. It wasn't even, because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a forensic scientist. It was like the thing like I wanted to be. Yeah, because I just loved like CSI and I really liked science. And then it was only as I got into sort of my early teens, picking my options. I remember watching like Billy Elliot on stage. And I was kind of like, oh, wait, I could actually do this as a career. People, I guess, make money doing this. Maybe I could do that as a job. And I was like, I guess I've already got a head start. Why not kind of try and do that?
What was it like after 101 Dalmatians? Like in terms of like acting wise, did you go for a lot of auditions at all?
Yeah. I mean, it was actually like crazy. And it's one of them weird things that I think. So I got my first ever job, which was Patch. I mean,
yeah.
Which exceeded, you know, expectations were, because I auditioned for Lucky, ended up landing the lead. And then I went on to get, I did a few commercials. I did The Snowman at the West End as a kid. And out of nowhere, it was something like out of my first like 10, 15 auditions, I'd got like over a third of the jobs.
Wow.
It was so, it was so weird because I was just getting this stuff. And that didn't set me up very well for later on, because I definitely, there's a bit,
you got used to getting cast.
I can obviously, oh, I'm sick of this. Yeah. And then I then realized that I know nothing. And yeah, as you get older, because to be a child actor, it is, you know, you sort of need imagination. You need to be able to take direction, because, yeah, and that is sort of the bare minimum. And obviously as you get older, the minimum is raised.
Mm.
And I didn't raise my minimum bar for a while.
What kind of sauce did you go for? Like, that were you...
I did a Dairy Dunkers commercial. I did a Sainsbury's Blue Parrot Range. I was played Jamie Oliver's nephew, which I always found strange that someone was cast as his nephew.
Yeah. One of his actual nephew.
Yeah. It was just, it was him and his wife, Jules, who was really lovely. And it was me and a girl called Charlotte. And we were playing brother and sister. We were supposed to be his niece and nephew. And we had to like run around the supermarket and had to have a day at the zoo. That was really fun. Because I like knew Jamie Oliver as in like, you know, he's a famous man from the telly.
Yeah.
So that was like, whoa, that was really cool.
So then was House of Anubis one of the kind of the biggest things then after that that you started to do, where you got most recognised?
Yeah, because I did a few episodes of The Bill as a kid. I did like 3 episodes, which was cool. And then I got cast in a Disney show called As the Bell Rings, which was a program that was like 3-minute episodes in between shows that they did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I got cast in that, and then after 2 weeks of filming, they cut me in the lead girl. And that was when I was on the other side of the Disney casting process.
Slice.
Yeah. And I was a bit like, oh, I deserve this because of what happened when I was a kid. Like, this is the other side.
Oh, no.
Not deserved it, but I was a bit like, it's calm. It was tough at the time. That, again, was a weird day. So I was at school, and my head of year, who is also my maths teacher, he's a really cool guy. We still keep in contact. He pulled me out of class and he was like, oh yeah, grab your things. And I was like, oh, okay, this is weird. Come out. And he was like, oh, your mum's here to see you. And I was like, that's weird. I was like, but Mr. Mower, I've done all my maths work. You'll be well proud of my tutoring. I did this. And he was like, yeah, yeah. And I thought, why doesn't he care? Yeah. he had a really good rapport. And then he walked me into this room with my mum. My mum had to sit down and be like, tell me I was cut. And at first I was like, oh, okay, it's fine. And then gradually this conversation's happening and I feel tears start to come.
No.
And then and he was like, you can take the day off if you want, you can go home. And I remember just going home and being sad. But then I think about it and I was like, it's fine. Like, I guess this is just what happens. And I think I was 12, 13 when it happened.
That is young. That is young to get that news.
Yeah, that was a bit harsh. And then, I don't know.
Did they tell you why they'd cut you? Was there any kind of explanation?
So the way it planned out, so towards the end of the second week, they started changing people in different roles. They swapped out. So there was a cast of about, it couldn't have been a dozen, maybe 10 of us, something like that. Let's say 5 boys, 5 girls. And they started swapping a few people around. And the director, a guy called Paul Rabluski, who is amazing, he pulled me to the side and was like, he gave me The Magnificent Seven to watch. And he was like, when other people aren't, even when you're not saying lines, like look at how people are acting and people are doing stuff. And he was trying to, I guess, make me a better actor, trying to teach me, trying to help me. So all this was happening for like the past few days. And I'd be honest, I didn't really think much about it. And then the Friday finished and I had to stay and do a bunch of tutoring for like 2-3 hours after I'd finished shooting. And then they told me on the Monday and I thought, oh, as if they made me do the tutoring and they knew they were going to cut me. And I remember being really annoyed about that.
Yeah.
So they eventually told us it's because they wanted a dark haired boy and a blonde haired girl.
Mm.
And they had the other way around. And I was like, they could have dyed my hair. They could have, you know.
Yeah.
But I've just learned to, you know, you've got to take the excuse with a pinch of salt. They're probably trying to be nice, but it's probably not, you know, it's probably has something to do with my ability. You know, if I was amazing, then they probably wouldn't have cut me. But then equally, I'm probably not as bad as I'm telling myself in my head. So it's just, you got to just accept it, really.
You could just go by there now and just wave your children's BAFTA at them and go, well, I wasn't that bad, was I?
Exactly. Well, no, but then, go back to the original question, was then House of Anubis was, I guess, the first thing. I remember when I got cast in that, I was 16, going 17. And yeah, being like, oh, you know, on a kid's show, on Nickelodeon, I've made it, life's done. And then very quickly realising that I know nothing, especially because like a bunch of the girls were older, the other guys were awesome, and just it felt like we were playing children and we were treated as children, but there was also, it suddenly felt like there was I should have been better. I was expected to be a bit better than just say it, stand there, say your lines, walk away kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly realized that I remember a conversation, people like Laurence Olivier, was someone said it and I was like, who is this guy? And people were like, what? And I just realized that I didn't know anything. I was like, I need to knuckle down and change what I'm doing, which wasn't actually enough to end up getting me cut from Anubis. So I did the first series, and then in the second series, I was told that I was only going to be in sort of the beginning and end, and I was like leaving. And they told me it's because they needed a storyline, and it had nothing to do with my ability or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was in the third series. But then again, I was like, it was rubbish, but it is what it is. And I guess I'd already been used to getting cut from stuff, and I was like, it's fine. But then it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because from that, I ended up being available and got cast in Wolfblood. And then from there, I ended up getting... So now I'm like, any bad news, I'm like, it's cool. It's obviously not meant to be, because the good thing's around the corner.
Yeah.
And it's allowed me to like a way of coping for sure.
Building that thick skin that actors have to have, I guess, in this industry.
Oh yeah, 100%. Because you just, until, you know, you've actually shot the thing, and then even then you might get cut. Like you don't know, you just don't know what's going to happen. And now I just tell myself that it's all for the greater good, and it's, I'm obviously not meant to be doing that. Something's around the corner, which I have no idea. So, yeah.
Jordan, that reminds me of something you said actually about when you kind of went from the age of 18 and then you started to take it more seriously as you got older.
Yeah, I think I was very similar. A similar sort of process to you, Bobby, where we had no process. It was a case of just like, you'd spent a long time just acting in things, and you weren't really being told how to act. You just sort of, you said lines. And then when I sort of got to sort of 17, 18, I like you said, I'd never raised my game. I just sort of continued to do what I was doing. And it took me years to realize that wasn't good enough.
Yep.
And no one tells you it's not good enough. You just don't get auditions anymore. You're like, okay, cool. I'm just, you know, something else will come up. So yeah, I think I had a similar kind of thing to you, where you just don't raise your game because you don't know you need to. You don't know what your game is.
That's it. And especially as you start around that age, well, over the next few years, you know, people start coming out of drama school and you've got, and always being like, yeah, well, I've already got my foot in the door. I'm already there. And then you realize, oh, wait, but these guys are really good. These people are amazing. And they're obviously going to just get hired.
So did you feel like, even when you're on like House of Anubis, I think you just obviously just said this, but did you feel that other people were better than you?
Yes.
Did you feel that?
Yeah, I remember having a conversation and being quite honest. Like, we were all just chatting as a cast. We came really close to the cast. One of the guys, Alex, is my housemate. But I remember having conversations with everyone and being like, oh, well, I'm clearly the worst actor here. And was just very, like, honest about it. But then, because for me, it's like, there's no shame in admitting that, because I know that I'm going to try and improve.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I started... I remember the script supervisor, I was having a conversation, she wrote me out this big list of films and stuff that I should watch, because I should watch this for performance, I should watch these films for director. These are just like iconic films, you should watch these. And she broke, it was all written down for me. She wrote this whole list. And I was like, cool, boom. And went and watched all them films. And I just took it, I take it as an opportunity to like learn. Like for me, there's no shame in admitting that I'm bad or whatever, because it's like, I hadn't tried yet. Now, yeah. Because at the time I used to hate, I remember an important lesson for me was like, because I always used to hate watching myself act, like hate it. And it got to the point I was like, this isn't helping me. This is not productive. And at what point am I just, I don't know if it's the right word. It basically wasn't helpful. And I thought, well, okay, why don't I like it? What do I not like about it? Well, I don't like it because I know on that day I felt like I was unprepared and I didn't know my lines, or that day I was, you know, I don't like that because that just looks silly. I started to actually break down what I was doing and be like, well, okay, let's not do that again, or let's try this differently. And and now I can watch myself with more of an objective view. Subjective view?
Something objective.
I know, yeah.
One of those.
I went back and watched some episodes of Wolfblood in prep for this interview. And you were wonderful in that.
Well, it was, I think, because watching House of Anubis, like, because we were shooting for 4 months and I very quickly realised that I was sort of out of my depth and not doing very well. So I think I improved a lot throughout that series. And then I had a year off, but that was when I was like, just cracked on watching films, essentially studying. I wasn't really acting. But I was watching a lot and just learning. And And then I went back for the second series and I wasn't in it. By the time Wolfblood come around, I've been cut from Anubis. I had like no money. I hadn't had any jobs apart from Anubis. I had like no auditions. I was like, I was in not a great place. And I remember getting this breakdown through and it just come through. And instantly I was like, okay, I've got this. I know exactly what I'm doing. And I think from a young age, I've always very much relied on just instincts. And that was one that I was like, right, I know exactly how I'm going to do this. And as I got older, I trust those instincts, but I'm able to, I think I use that as my foundation and then I'm able to like tweak it from there. But yeah, Wolfblood, it just came naturally to me how I was going to play Ridian. And you know, the scripts were amazing. It was brilliant. And I feel super lucky to have had that. And yeah, thank you. I'm so proud of Wolfblood, really am.
Yeah, it's a brilliant show. And Jordan and I were saying actually before you came on, you guys have huge fan. There's a huge fan base for Wolfblood. What's that like?
Odd, you know. So I'm not on any social media anymore. So I kind of don't see it as much as maybe some people do. But so recently, obviously doing Casualty, what was really interesting is when the BBC put it out, my dad was like, oh my God, on Facebook, he's like, the Wolfblood fans are out. He's like, they're all really happy to see you in something. And
yeah, so
that's super cool. But Wolfblood, yeah, it was the first BBC show to be sold worldwide, which was crazy.
That's huge.
Yeah. It just did so well. I think it was just at the time, it was the right, you know, because with Twilight and everything, it was the right sort of genre. It was that fantasy thing. Plus, it was slightly older. It was that younger team. It was on BBC Three for a while. I just think there wasn't much like it, and it just sort of took off. But yeah, I don't know. I find it weird that the idea of having like fans and stuff. It is really, I mean, it's nice, but it's a strange concept.
Did you come off social media because of anything to do with acting or
that kind sort of? I think one, I've never massively been into social media anyway. Like back in the day with like MySpace or Facebook and stuff, I wasn't massively into it, and then I had Twitter, never really tweeted. It was Instagram because pictures and scrolling and videos. I was like, ooh, I got to do this. And I spent so much of my day just scrolling Instagram, just pointlessly. And it's not like I was using it as a tool to like build my brand or my career or anything like that. I was just posting rubbish on there, just being an idiot. and I was like, you know, I was like, this isn't helping me. Plus, I did feel a pressure to not post the wrong thing or to post certain things, or there was often, you know, I couldn't be entirely myself because I was very wary that there's a lot of kids on there or like, and I was like, you know what, what's the point? And so I just got rid of it and it's great.
I'm tempted to give up social media, but I just don't know if I can.
That's fair.
But I would like to, but yeah, I guess for keeping in touch with people and things like that.
That's the downside.
Mm.
I guess ultimately, though, people who know me or there is ways to get in contact with me through, you know, like my close friends, my family. There are people on social media. People are.
I think you'd say that it's like kind of like the mindless scrolling that I don't like myself doing. So addictive, isn't it? Yeah. They catch you.
For years, I feel like I avoided the explore page, and then once I found it, what's the thing about me? I'm like, right, I'm going to bed now, and before I know it, I'm like, I've spent 45 minutes just scrolling.
Yes,
The timer, so it's like, oh, you've spent an hour today, and that should tell me to get up. It's like, okay, dismiss, right, carry on. I'm awful for it, and don't get me wrong, I'm still also I'm trying to be on my phone less. I feel like people say that, but I'm genuinely terrible, but I've totally replaced it with just Sky Sports News and YouTube.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was slightly better in my head.
How was it with the Wolfblood like experience? Were you all a similar age, or did you feel like you were slightly older? Did you have a bit more experience? What was it like being part of a new cast of people?
No, we were all, so on Anubis, I was the youngest, and then on Wolfblood, we were all about the same age, all within the space of a few years.
Yeah.
But it was great. I feel so fortunate that on both shows, there was real genuine friendships there and still are to this day. Obviously, there were slight hiccups in places, but for the most part, everyone got on so well. And yeah, I definitely felt more responsibility, I think. And one thing I think I've learned over the years is that, like, the atmosphere on set is set by, like, the directors and the actors and the producers, but, like, the people in those positions, and it does trickle down. Like, if people are relaxed, it relaxes everyone else, and I think that's important. And for me, I always want to try and... I mean, I love what I do, and I love being on set. And I've had other jobs, and I know that it's not the worst way to make money. I know it's a stressful and it's a high-pressure environment, absolutely. Mm. But I don't think it has to be a negative place to work, and I really try to make it not that. Mm. Regardless of, I guess, the position I'm in. But, yeah.
What was it like winning a BAFTA?
Oh, the most surreal experience. And, like, I really felt like an imposter at first, to be honest. I didn't for a long time. I didn't expect to win it at all. Like, there's not to even be nominated. So I was having conversations with my friend the week before I got nominated, being like, so Wolf Blood was out and it was doing well, but I'd started like presenting for CBBC, and that was something that sort of came really naturally to me. And I felt like, and I enjoyed it. I was like, this is really fun. And I know that I felt like I was good at it. And I was like, I just don't know if I'm good enough to act. I don't know if it's like, I love it, but really, like, long-term, is it a bit of a pipe dream? Like, I feel like I could present quite well. And he was like, oh, you never know. I don't know. A week later, I get nominated for the BAFTA. And I was like, oh, okay. Maybe I can do stuff. And then but I was up against Amy, who played Maddie in Wolf Blood. And she's an incredible actress, and she's amazing. And working with her was just brilliant. Like, I don't have enough good words to say about working with her. And I was like, well, she's going to win, because she's like, I don't know. I just thought, because she deserves it. And like, being next to her, see what she does. And I'm like, So then when it came around to it, I mean, I hadn't prepared a single thing to say. And I think you can find the speech, my speech on YouTube. Anything. I mumble, thank you. I didn't know what. I was just shocked. And I remember getting backstage, I've got this huge smile on my face, and people being like, yeah, all right. I was like, yeah. And it was so heavy, and I was like, this is the weirdest thing. You know, I've been cut from House of Anubis like 2 years before.
Yeah.
To suddenly be in this place was the strangest thing. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I started like making up reasons why I'd won it. And I was like, oh, I just don't know, maybe I'm got it because of this and that. So I'd done jobs for BAFTA, as in I did a talk with some school kids, mm-hmm. and me and Shannon Flynn, who was on CBBC at the time. I'm not sure if she still is, actually. Mm-hmm. She was on Friday Download and did a bunch of presenting and stuff. And me and her did this like talks with these school kids, like hosted this day. And I remember at the time being like, oh, maybe I've got it because BAFTA did that, even though I know that's ridiculous because the people who put me in there aren't.
Yeah, of course, that wouldn't have been there. Yeah.
That's not. But that was my thing at the time. I just had, you know, no confidence and stuff. And my producer, as I got back into like the main room, my producer was there. He was like the first person to see me, and he was like, Bobby, can you just start like believing in yourself now? Can you understand this thing? And I was like, okay. And then it took me years for me to actually start believing in myself and actually think, oh, I deserve that because I did a good job. And that's, you know, so it's cool. But yeah, it was the most surreal experience, and it's at my mum's house on the side. And I mean, one day I'll move it here or something. But yeah, it's strange.
So when Wolf Blood ended,
yes,
what happened afterwards? I mean, I've seen you've done some amazing things. I mean, firstly, Honey 3. How did that come about? Can we talk about Honey 3?
We can talk about Honey 3.
What the hell?
So Wolf Blood finishes, and the rest of the cast, well, I've done a few kid shows now, and I was a bit like, I want to try and to break out of kids TV. I want to try and do something more adult and try and do something else. And that transition was into adult TV was harder than I thought it was going to be.
How old were you at this point?
I would have been coming out of Wolf Blood 20, 21.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, if you want to yeah, let's talk about, so I, because I danced as a kid, yeah. I danced, and then the acting was sort of this hobby thing I did.
Yeah.
I said when I was about 13, 14, to dance in a movie, it's like, that is the dream. I remember talking yeah. to people about it and being like, that is absolutely the dream. I think Step Up had been out at the time, and those are the other dance movies. I mean, The First Honey was amazing.
Like, yeah.
My sister watched it a ton. And so yeah, that was always like a dream. And then I remember getting the audition for it, and originally auditioned for the male lead who didn't have to dance. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, that's fine. So I'd stopped dancing since Anubis. So when I was like 16, 17, I hadn't danced. And then I would have been, 22, 23. I just needed to work. I hadn't really had money. And I knew, like, Honey 3 in my head, like, no disrespect, but it's, you know, the script wasn't, it's not the best in the world, but I was like, it's a dance movie, and it filmed in South Africa for 9 weeks.
Wow.
And I
was like, amazing. Yeah.
I was like, I chatted with my team. Some of them didn't want me to take it. A few people, you know, peers and whatnot were like, maybe you shouldn't do this. And I was like, nah, I'm doing this for 14-year-old me. I'm going to go. Yeah. So in the end, they said, we're not going to cast you as the male lead. There's another role. So this is quite funny. So the character's name is Laser. Mm-hmm. And his character description says Laser, ripped black American. and the thing is, what was funny is because they're from South Africa, essentially, but I think a big part of the fact they cast me was because I was white, and they realized that they didn't have many white people in it, and it being American film, and they were like, oh gosh, we might, I don't know. But so I did it.
Reverse diversity.
Exactly. I was like, oh, it must be inclusive now. Yeah. But it was an amazing experience. And oh my gosh, what a time. South Africa. I was in Cape Town for 9 weeks. It made me realize why I love dancing.
Yeah.
You know, dancing every day, just the people, some of the friendships I made there for like dancers. And we'd be dancing all day, like in the rehearsals, learning. And they'd be like, right, you've got a break. We've got an hour. And the first thing people do, right, music on loud, and everyone's just there freestyling, dancing with each other. And it was like, I was like, this is incredible. And I'm so glad I've done that job. And for me, and I learned so much about, I think, myself, and about how much I want to travel, want to see the world. And the big learning point, that was the big thing I take from that experience, is that sometimes it's not just about the job. And like, not every job is going to, you know, further my career. Not everything's going to be a blockbuster hit. Not everything is going to be the next best thing. Sometimes you've got to do something because you know it's going to be fun. You're going to love it. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I had just the best time ever. I've got that now. If people say, like, I'll go to your happy place, I just remember this one afternoon where we'd been dancing all morning, and this like beach scene. It was lunchtime. So I'd just eaten. Everyone was back on set. There's music playing. I was looking at the beach. I was sat in these like bean bags, which is the green room, under this like sheltered bit in South Africa. And I didn't have there was not a care in the world at that point. I could just hear music and people laughing and dancing. I was on the beach, and I just thought, do you know what? I'm so at peace right now. And
that is so amazing. Now, like,
that is my happy place to go to.
Did you like, because obviously you said you hadn't danced for a few years. Did you like, do you like your own like intense like training before you start to film, or did you just get there and go, hey guys?
So initially I didn't have to dance because of the character I was auditioning for. And then they sent me a video of this routine. And my sister's a dancer, because me and her danced together growing up. And I was like, Abby, I need your help because I'm trying to learn this routine and I can't dance anymore. She was like, oh, Bobby, you're a great dancer. You'll be fine. I was like, Abby, I can't dance anymore. And she... So I put on this routine, tried doing this dance to her, and she stopped it. And it's just like, Bobby, what are you doing with your body? So she just like, she drilled me hard, got it to some kind of an acceptable standard, ended up getting cast. And then when I went out there, I was just very honest with everyone, being like, look, I did dance, but I haven't danced for years. So I just threw myself into it. And again, for me, there's no shame in being bad at something. And so I just tried. And I mean, compared to the dancers in it, you can see that I am not a professional dancer, but I'm having a good time and I loved it. So that's it.
Like, it sounds a bit like, you know, when non-actors go on a gap year or something like that, and they just have this totally other experience to their normal life.
Yeah.
And you need, that when you're a young person?
For sure. Oh my God, it was incredible. And for my own development as a, because that's when I first started, like, I started like meditating when I was there, and the way, you know, I went around some of the like the townships and stuff, and seeing like some real poverty, and chatting to people who are from there and that were just so happy to be doing what they were doing, and their perspectives on life, and being like, I don't have a lot to moan or complain about, you know, like it gave me just such good perspective. And yeah, it was an incredible time.
What an experience.
Yeah.
I'm watching the film. I'm going to watch it this weekend.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
I am really looking forward to it now.
Good times.
Amazing.
I think I would just like to ask quickly before we finish, Bobby, what would you say to young people who maybe want to get into acting? Would you recommend it if you had, you know, friends, kids and things like that?
You've got to love it and do it for the right reasons. Because if you just want to be famous, there's way easier ways to be famous. You know, now there's an abundant ways to do that. So if you want to act, like, I think you've just got to love it, and you've got to commit, and you've got to know that you've got to be able to take criticism and be able to look at yourself and go, okay, because it is subjective, and some people might love something, some people might hate something. You're never going to be wrong, but there's always ways you can be better, and that is okay. So just do what you love and just go for it.
I think what I've really taken from this chatting with you, Bobby, is that you've got a really great like sense of not trying to kid yourself. And like you said, knowing if you're bad at something, admitting it, but then just trying to get better at it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, like, really great way of looking at things. I'm not just giving up, but going, okay, cool, I can get better. And then doing that.
If you realize where you're at, if you're true to yourself, like, then you've got all that room for improvement, because it's all there in front of you, and you realize where you are. You're like, okay, cool. And you can't just expect to be amazing at anything. There was a time when, you know, we couldn't walk, and you learn to walk, and now it's second nature, but like everything has to be learned. And I just think that's the same with, I don't know, with general behaviors and everything.
What I'm also getting from this is that you're quite hard on yourself, and you obviously have very high standards. So I just want to make that really clear to anyone listening that I actually think you're very hard on yourself.
I do hold myself to a stupid standard. But I also it's knowing that I'm gonna fail sometimes, and that's also okay. But like, why not at least aim high, and then, you know, if I end up around the middle, hopefully I've had a good time doing it. Like,
well, you've clearly pushed yourself, and you know it's clearly paid off. So
yeah, hopefully. Well, I mean, I just you know, if I can keep doing what I love and earn like a decent living doing it, if I can end up like maybe raising a family on doing what I love, like, that's success to me, and that's a happy time. So we'll see.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much, Bobby, for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been really nice to talk to you guys. Cheers.
Thank you so much to Bobby for being on the podcast. And thank you to George for providing the music. You can find him at soundcloud.com/George. That's JAUGE. Tune in next time. See you later.